Welcome to this deep dive. Today, we're digging into a really interesting story from episode 15 of the Military Tales YouTube channel. It features Don Camel, who volunteered at the Tennessee Museum of Aviation. We're looking at his time as an F-100 pilot in Vietnam.
Yeah, it's a great interview. It gives such a personal look, you know, into that whole period, a very human perspective on things.
Absolutely. So Don's background, well, he grew up on a small farm, southwestern Ohio. Not really an aviation family.
Right.
But he got that flying bug early. He was also a good baseball player, actually got a scholarship for it.
Mm-hmm.
But flying was the real passion. Saved up his money. And incredibly, he soloed a two-seater after just 6 hours.
6 hours, that's fast.
Isn't it? And he admits, like a lot of young pilots maybe, he did some risky stuff back then. But his goal was clear even then. Single engine, single-seat jets, fighters.
That focus is key, isn't it? Not just flying, but that kind of flying.
Yeah.
Fighter pilot dream.
Exactly. So he joins Air Force ROTC, aiming straight for that. But you know how it goes with the military sometimes.
Needs of the service, yeah.
Right. He graduated high in his pilot training class, but this was the late 50s, early 60s, and Strategic Air Command, SAC, the nuclear deterrent force, needed pilots badly. So huge disappointment for him. He gets assigned to KC-97s. Piston engine tankers.
Wow. Talk about the opposite of a single-seat fighter. Big four-propeller aircraft.
Yeah.
That must have been tough, especially with the SAC's mission profile.
You can hear it in his voice in the interview, talking about seeing oil leaking from this, you know, older plane.
Yeah.
But here's the thing, his persistence. Every single year in SAC, he put in his volunteer requests for fighters, didn't give up.
That's dedication.
Yeah.
Sticking to the dream.
Eventually, he did upgrade to the KC-135 jets, the jet tankers. Got a pretty nice assignment in Puerto Rico for 3 years, too.
Okay, so a bit of an improvement there.
Yeah, but even from Puerto Rico, they were doing TDY's temporary duty to Southeast Asia.
Ah, so getting closer to the action in a way.
Exactly. Refueling F-105s, F-4s, the strike aircraft going north over North Vietnam. He saw them coming back.
Right. He would have seen the damage firsthand. SAMs, MiGs, the heavy AAA they faced up there.
Must have been sobering, seeing those planes, knowing the risks those pilots were taking. And for him, it probably just reinforced where he really wanted to be.
Mm-hmm. Constant reminder.
And he mentions in the interview, there was this Air Force policy back then, trying to give all qualified pilots a shot at combat experience.
Rotation, yeah. Made sense.
So that policy, combined with his constant volunteering for F-4s, F-105, even prop jobs like the A-1 Skyraider or O-1 Bird Dog, anything single seat, really.
He wasn't picky at that point, just wanted out of tankers.
Pretty much. And then in 1968, he got the word F-100 Super Sabers.
Finally, the Hun.
Yeah, with deployment orders to Vietnam right after training.
Must have been quite a moment for him. Relief, excitement.
You bet. So water survival training in Florida, then F-100 training at Luke Air Force Base, Arizona. He talks about just loving being back in a single engine plane.
Getting back to his roots, so to speak.
Totally. And he tells this great story about his dollar ride, the first flight in the F-100.
Oh, yeah.
His instructor apparently flew them down into the Grand Canyon.
Whoa. Seriously?
Seriously. He even says, you know, you could never do that today. Regulations are way tighter.
No kidding. That really does paint a picture of a different time in military flying.
Or
leeway, maybe.
Seems like it. Anyway, he graduated high in his F-100 class, too. Shows he had the skills, right? And the drive.
Absolutely. Clearly took to it quickly. Ready for what was next.
And what was next was Vietnam. Bien Ho Air Base. With the 510th Tactical Fighter Squadron. The Buzzards of Benoit.
Okay.
Now, he arrives there, this former multi-engine tanker guy.
Right. Joining a squadron probably full of guys who'd only ever flown fighters.
Exactly. He felt like an outsider, you know? Maybe a bit of skepticism from the others.
You can imagine.
Yeah.
A different background coming into a tight-knit combat unit.
But he earned his stripes pretty quickly. He talks about this early mission. They were on alert, scrambled for troops and contact.
Okay, straight into it.
Yeah. And the FAC, the forward air controller, the guy in the small plane directing the strikes.
Mm-hmm.
He was convinced this one hut, a hooch, under some trees, was hiding VC weapons.
Yeah, a suspected target.
So Don goes in with high-drag bombs, the ones meant for low-altitude drops, slower falling.
Right.
His lead misses. Don misses on his first pass, but his second bomb. Right through the window. Big secondary explosion.
Bullseye.
Yep. And he remembers an FAC just going wild on the radio, super excited. He said that mission really helped him gain respect in the squadron.
I bet it did. Proving himself under pressure, delivering the ordnance effectively. That's what counts.
And he really stresses that their main job, the F-100's role there, was close air support, troops in contact, helping guys on the ground who were in deep trouble.
The most critical mission, really. Direct support when friendly forces are engaged.
He tells this one story. Intense. Supporting army troops who were surrounded. They ran out of bombs, ran out of 20-millimeter cannon rounds.
Nothing left to shoot.
Nothing. But the guys on the ground still needed help, needed suppression fire until the evacuation helos could get in.
So what did they do?
They dropped their external fuel tanks.
Dropped the tanks as weapons.
Yeah. Just to try and keep the enemy's heads down.
No.
Shows the desperation, right?
Yeah.
And the commitment to helping those ground troops.
Wow. That's resourceful in a grim sort of way.
Yeah.
Using anything available when lives are on the line.
He doesn't make it sound like it was common, more like a last resort in a really bad spot. He also mentions, you know, the F-100s mostly flew in the south.
Right. It wasn't really suited for the heavy air defenses up north compared to the F-4s and F-105.
Yeah, it was an older design by then. Mm. Main threats were small arms, automatic weapons fire. He took some hits now and then, but never had to eject, thankfully.
Still dangerous work, even without SAMs and MiGs everywhere.
Oh, absolutely. He tells another mission story, too. A FAC spots a heavily armed boat, a sandpan, hiding under trees.
Okay, another tricky target.
And this time, they had slick bombs, unguided, faster falling, harder to aim precisely from altitude at a small target.
Mm-hmm. More challenging.
So again, he's wingman, lead misses several times, dons down to his last bomb.
Pressure's on.
And so, direct hit.
Yeah.
Destroyed the boat. He jokes in the interview that when he got back, he told everyone he sank a North Vietnamese battleship.
Huh. Gotta have that sense of humor, I guess. It highlights the difficulty, though. Multiple passes, close calls, finally getting the job done.
It does. But what really comes through, listening to him in episode 15, is the feeling he had doing these missions.
Yeah.
Real self-satisfaction, he calls it. Helping those troops on the ground. He talks about how young they were, these American soldiers facing such tough conditions. You can hear the emotion there.
That connection is powerful. Knowing you're making a direct difference for the guys fighting face-to-face with the enemy, that's the core of CAS.
Definitely. Now, about the F-100 itself, he loved that plane.
The Super Sabre, yeah. Classic jet.
He calls it a stick and rudder seat of the pants airplane. Basic instruments compared to later jets.
A real pilot's aircraft where feel was everything.
Exactly. And he notes it had a long service life, flew with the Guard until around 79.
It did. A very robust and adaptable airframe.
He mentions the F-100 Fighter Pilots Association, too, the reunions they have, that bond between pilots who flew the same jet.
Oh, yeah. That camaraderie lasts a lifetime.
And then this amazing part, there's apparently one last flying F-100, a two-seater, privately owned in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
A two-seat F model.
Mm.
Still flying. That's incredible.
Isn't it? And the most remarkable thing, maybe the highlight of the interview, in May 2016, 40 years after his last combat mission.
No way.
Yes. He got to fly it again.
He flew the F-100 again.
After 40 years.
Yep. Went to a reunion in Fort Wayne, signed up 7th in line for a ride. He talks about the feeling. The afterburner kicking in, takeoff, doing rolls, high G turns, pushing it up near Mach 1.
Oh, I can only imagine. The muscle memory, the sounds, the sensations flooding back. Must have been unbelievable, doing load passes over the reunion group. And his wife, Kay, was there seeing him fly the F-100 for the very first time.
Wow. That's a heck of a coda to his flying career. What an experience. Closure, maybe?
It sounds like it. He wraps up the interview reflecting on his life goals, flying jets, college baseball, even racing cars. He seems really content, satisfied with how things turned out, including his volunteer work at the Aviation Museum.
A life fully lived, it sounds like. Pursuing passions, dealing with detours, and finding fulfillment. It's a great story.
It really is. So wrapping up this look at episode 15, Don Campbell's story, it just shows so much, doesn't it? The dedication, how pilots had to adapt back then.
Yeah, from the disappointment of tankers to the intensity of close air support in the Hun.
Right, and it highlights that crucial link between air power and the troops on the ground, plus that deep connection pilots have with their aircraft.
Absolutely, and getting to fly it again after all that time, just amazing. A real testament to that enduring passion.
Makes you think, you know, how much the technology has changed since Vietnam.
Huge leaps.
But the human element, the skill, the courage, the desire to serve, that connection to the mission that seems pretty constant.
All set.
So, for you listening, what part of Don Campbell's story from episode 15 really stands out? How does hearing about his experiences, his perspective, maybe shape how you think about that era, about the pilots who flew those missions? Something definitely worth mulling over.